four. We're up to still on Lake Mackay Station. Commissioner Hudson, any questions?
Yes, thank you. You asked the question I had about the.
Commissioner McLeod, anything on Lake Mackay Station?
I had a question rising out of your 9.4. You know, I may not be able to answer it given your recording here, the further submissions point. The concern their access road would pass through the corner of a barn. Does that mean the barn's on a paper road? Or a real road for that matter?
I'd say it's an unformed legal road. Just might happen to have a barn on it. Not sure if there's a license to occupy.
I think we can safely assume possibly not. I'm sure I'll be drawing attention to the fact myself. Question for you regarding infrastructure. Mr. Glasner's got no problem with the other three, one, three, and four. Which are truly out on the sticks or in the clouds, or certainly area one is. Would the subdivision provisions, which I ought to remember, enable consent to be declined if on-site servicing, disposal, wastewater disposal was impractical. Obviously, it won't be impractical because of the density, but because perhaps of the the vegetation, the rocks, whatever is up there.
if the activity status stays either discretionary or restricted discretionary, yes, because one of the policies and assessment matters is servicing, that needs to be satisfied. So, yes, is my short answer. I'm comfortable that it would.
Okay. That's all for me. Any more on LMS?
No, thank you.
All right. Cooper. Two issues here. One, the O&L. And I think we deal with the rural residential and forest and bird. So the O&L. Any questions for Mr. Barr on the O&L? That's a pass. Leslie and Jerry Burden. Commissioner Monroe. Mr. Hutz.
No, thank you.
Commissioner McLeod.
Thank you, sir.
Well, on that note, we come to Forest and Bird and Mr. Alty, the rural residential zone. Question from me. You refer at 12.4 to covenants being granted in 2001, effectively precluding exercise of the zoning provision. Are they still on the title? And who are they in favour of?
They're in favour of properties on the southern side of the river. I can't say if they're still on the title, but we can search that and see if the instruments are still there.
Please check. And that's because those properties on the other side are right on the terrace and look straight down on the rural residential site.
Yes, or straight across, yes.
They certainly looked higher.
Yeah. Right.
Now, I was a bit confused by this description of the process about 2004 resource consent. So we have a consent with leases designed to defeat the subdivision provision and therefore defeat the covenant, presumably. So we have consent granted, appeal dismissed, and then bold in the High Court. Is that the sequence?
Looks, yes, yes.
And can we have a copy of that High Court decision, please? Because I couldn't find it.
Certainly.
Any more for anybody else?
One more question. That sequence that's just been referred to, that struck me as being remarkable. Is that normal? Don't get any grins from across the table. I'll just move along. And I think you're possibly looking at the owner of the property across the road being Lloyd Ferguson.
He might be one of the interested parties, or being successful at the land. It's unique. Yeah. It's relatively unique.
Is that the land that was the subject of a big stoush over an enforcement order in the name of Ennis?
Yes. Rural Forest and Dirt Protection Society enforcement order. That land was, and that land was cleared, but cleared as in it was dist, and it previously contained Hartusk and Cushing Field that qualified as an SNA. But the rural residential zone in the operative district plan doesn't have any indigenous vegetation clearance rules, so you wouldn't know where the zone stops and starts. But the enforcement proceedings didn't relate to that zoned land because there's no rules. It was the rural general land, zoned land around it, which was subject to it.
Oh, that's right. They got an interim order that was then removed because somebody pointed that fact out, that it wasn't contrary to the rural residential zone provisions.
There was wider rural general land which was still cleared, but I think the order was dismissed because the rules weren't... there's some doubt over the rules and...
Okay, I can reread in this. Clearly by trustees. Mr. Hudson.
gone through a very detailed evaluation of the consents and the alternatives to the existing resource consent. I understand your reasoning for recommending that this submission not be accepted. What I'd like to try and understand is how, again, how you see this going forward, whether there is another method for managing the land, and this is without getting into whether the zone provisions or the provisions relating to the site be the same or similar to what's been consented, but just as a general concept, I'm just wondering, when we turn our minds to the submission and we've heard the evidence from the submitter, they are going to say that they are very tightly bound. They see that in the evidence by the resource consent, and they're looking for a more practical way of managing, developing and managing the land. So in terms of that wider issue, can you see a way forward that doesn't mean relying so much on the consent conditions but achieving the same outcomes?
Not really. I think the consent conditions are an outcome of the nature and scale of the activity sought and gained, and reflect the sensitivity of the environment and the compensation that package that went into it. So my simple answer is that I think the rural zone works for the site. I think the discretionary regime ONL using the assessment matters is quite well suited to that site because it's a big site. There's probably areas in it that can absorb development, but there's areas in it that are probably very sensitive, so that's it's that kind of environment that the ONL assessment matters are geared up to work quite well in. Perhaps if they didn't ask for so much, the resource consent conditions wouldn't be so complicated.
Yeah. It did seem that one of the fundamental difficulties with even switching from the consent conditions to an alternative is how to ensure that all of the public good aspects of that proposed development would be assured. And you're nodding, so you agree with that too. And is there another mechanism available to, through a zoning or some alternative to resource consent, to achieving those outcomes?
I mean, not really. I mean, the council have an open space zone in Volume B in the operative plan, which is probably going to review. That open space zone is essentially that. It's used. It's the green tinged annotation that borders the Peninsula Bay subdivision adjacent to Mr. Beresford's submission, and around Albertown. I don't think it would work in this site because the wider part of the site and the public access through it are walking trails, and the easements set out and the conditions would work. I even think that the requested provisions of the Mount Iron Park Allenby submission that Mr. White put forward in terms of quite a detailed consent notice regime and setting out how the first resource consent will establish mechanisms for walkways, formal walkways, to be set up and formalised on the Mount Iron land. I mean, that's, to me, seem to be slightly less complicated than inserting the requirement for the landowner or the applicant to install tracks, and that they're built to a certain form, and that there's ends up being standards in the zone chapter that are essentially just conditions of building, constructing tracks and ensuring that they're set up through easement arrangements. I think there could be other ways to achieve the public good components, the compensation components of the consent, but I don't think I'm not sure about transferring them into rules. Maybe the complicating factor is that they're in their mind, the staging is rigid, and they're committed to providing the walkways, but they still want to do them at some point, whereas the Mount Iron Park submission by comparison is relatively more simple than that. Well, we want 12 or 13, 14 building platforms. So the first subdivision of that land, there might be a bulk title subdivision. Let's set up all the easements and get it done once. Whereas this, you know, this sorry, you don't know, I'm trying to tell you, the Glenview Station Zone, they haven't really stood back and said, is there another way of doing it? They've just transposed what they think is difficult, and they've probably tried to make a rod for the council's back by getting the council to administer it as a zone provision, which just simply doesn't work. So I think there's probably other ways. If these became a zone, if those activity areas became a zone and there's still that compensation component that needed to be followed through, I think there's other ways to do it. It might not satisfy the applicants in terms of their preference around staging or when they were triggering and things, but the Mount Iron Park by comparison seems simpler. So that's one way of kind of, hopefully that answers your question in some respects. There might be other mechanisms available. So instead of having them as rules, they're set up as a consequence of the subdivision. But having said that, and having said all that, I've realised now that that zone isn't set up on a subdivision. It's set up on land use activities, and I think the ownership staying the same.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. I think I provided quite a long answer and realised that the ownership structure would be different, but I haven't really thought about that because I don't really see it as a problem that the council, you know, from the terms of trying to come up with something else to try to solve a solution.
Yes, no, that was helpful because obviously we've got to turn our minds in terms of the Section 32 tests to other methods or modification of the existing methods. So your answer is helpful in that regard. So that's fine. Thank you.
Question about staging. I read with interest the Environment Court decision that said that the then applicant proffered the staging as a means to mitigate the effects of the delay in screen planting growing to a sufficient height to provide the necessary screening. And in fact, Mr. Darby is quoted in the High Court decision as saying that this is our answer to that concern. We're now saying, or we don't like the staging because it's blowing a big hole in the economics of their project. And do you have a view as to whether staging is required? To appropriately manage the effects.
So in that context, was the staging being staggered so that if public access was opened up through the site, people wouldn't see the development and be offended by that? They weren't going to see, they weren't allowed into certain parts of the site until the development was sufficiently screened?
Well, I think the...
Is that the context?
I think it's the staging of the residential development. It's first stage golf course, lakeside and 10 dwellings, plus all of the work, all of the other earthworks. Stage two, further revegetation, construction of 20 more dwellings. Stage three, remaining revegetation and the balance of the dwellings. So I think the theory was they could have 10 dwellings while the plants grew, but they could only build the balance when the screening was well underway.
I think the screening is important from the perspective of mitigating the effects of the buildings, and I wonder if there's a bit of a gap there in your ecologist evidence where they're saying that you don't need to worry about staging in terms of the communities establishing. I think the staging's there so that there's a sufficient amount of screening from a visual perspective, not from an ecological density or diversity perspective. Has the community, that ecological community, becoming established? I think the staging is important from with respect to the development of the home sites or the residential units. In terms of, I was turning my mind, sorry, to triggers around staging for the walkways and those sorts of things, and what might be simpler is if all the walkways are undertaken at the commencement of works. I don't know how favourable that would be to the applicant, though.
Well, on the face of it, works have already commenced.
They have, yeah.
Because when we were up there, the earthworks are already well underway for a bottom series of 10 houses. Now, that's all I have.
Yeah, just one, thanks, Mr. Barr. In a nutshell, the sort of standard resource management shorthand and the evidence of the staff and yourself in the urban environment has been that beyond a certain scale, zones and plan changes and structure plans and certainty tend to be the right way of dealing with development rather than resource consents. But if I was to try and summarise the analysis in respect of Bigley Dubay proposition, is that even though it's a very large scale, the sheer sensitivities environmentally are such that the unique ability to manage fine detail, staging requisites between individual buildings and things like screening and paths is inherently the better, most appropriate means than the broader brush zone framework. Is that a fair way of summarising where the staff seem to be going? Because the analysis keeps saying the resource consent gives better confidence, gives better certainty, shows how to deal with these finely balanced nuances of extreme sensitivity. Is that fair?
Yes, it does. And I think that if you ask somebody to prepare its own rules and a structure plan framework that achieved the level of certainty the consent had, it wouldn't. The
it just seems impossible, seems to be what you said to Commissioner.
Well, I don't know if it would be impossible, but I don't think the developer submitter would like it, because it would provide, it would be just as rigid and just as inflexible. Yeah. So.
Okay. Because it seems to be that what the staff recommendation is that the most appropriate means of responding to the issues of the site is to effectively require a resource consent based way forward in the absence of an extraordinarily detailed planning response, which you have otherwise, for instance in the case of Mount Iron, the Allenby Farms said that actually leads to really inefficient planning provisions where you have pages and 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 pages of specific requirements. That fair in terms of contextualising how to position the Glen Dubay response in the context of the other submission?
Yes, it is. I mean, I appreciate where I've said there's not enough detail, there's not enough certainty, the rules won't fit, and then somebody's provided that essentially, and I said that's too much, I don't want that either.
That's what I'm trying to learn. Not a criticism, but I think there's an argument that the Glen Dubay landscape, the ONL context, might just be so extreme that it's the only way to actually deal with that sensitivity.
I think the specific activities within the specific areas warrants a separate zoning approach and a structure plan more than anything else that's been put in front of us in terms of submissions. It's just the level of detail that would be required to ensure that developments, not even those that are contemplated by the framework, but breach the rules. And something I'm uncomfortable with as well is that even though the structure plan permits a wide range of activities, buildings are controlled, lots of activities I accept that would generate traffic are controlled or restricted discretionary, but that still creates, it's not a permitted base in terms of that zoning framework. It strictly might not be a permitted baseline, but it's a strong sense of entitlement that that's where we start from.
Yep.
And if you're looking at how rigid and how detailed the resource consent is, I've also got concerns about what might come in through a resource consent if the zoning's accepted.
Well, thank you. That was all.
And following up from that, is the fundamental issue that a structure plan is a good process provided the environment is not so sensitive that you can't accept the measure of flexibility inherent in a structure plan approach?
Structure plans don't have to be flexible, but they should be there to provide certainty. And the PDP provides that by its activity status of control, where developments have one, restricted discretion where they're not, because the hard work's already been done in terms of where's your access, where things are going to go.
But in this particular case, substantially more detail would be required than has been offered.
Yes. And my overall view, especially for that open space farm area, is that any provisions are going to look so much like, from my perspective, any rural framework is going to look so close to the rural zone and ONL assessment matters that it may as well just stay zoned rural, or else you're just duplicating two zones.
Sure, we'll have an interesting discussion with the Glen Dubay team. Cross Hill, now Sunny Heights, then limited to the ONL.
I think this has been canvassed through the landscape evidence. Thank you, sir.
Question McLeod. Would be of the same view. All right. Jeremy Bell. Let's talk about the airport zone first. Commissioner Hudson.
No, sir. I think that Mr. Barr has identified the issues and don't have any questions or matters for discussion.
Commissioner McLeod.
All right.
Pass. Do I recall Mr. Brown's evidence correctly that the zone would provide for 55,000 square metres, or is it 5,500 of gross floor space?
55,000.
I think it's 55,000. What would that? We had this discussion with Mr. Heath, who got himself a little tangled as to what he was talking about having overlay. How would that compare with the gross floor space on the Wanaka Town Centre? Any idea?
Well, while you're having the conversation yesterday, I measured the, on GIS, I measured the roof area of Wanaka Newville, and it was about 1,600 square metres. So that's quite a lot. Is it 55,000 square metres? They have set that out for us helpfully in their structure plan, haven't they? Because when they look at all the setbacks and things, there's a net developable area.
It's about 50 times the size of Wanaka Newville.
So, presumably, are we safe in assuming that's bigger than the floor space of the Wanaka Town Centre? Given that New World would say would have to be the largest single building, wouldn't it?
Pretty much.
It's been smaller. New World.
It's been smaller than tiny, by comparison.
Estimated buildable area of 5.524 hectares.
Maybe you could just go away and turn that into an actual GFA, because 5 hectares of buildable area might just be ground plate. which means if there were additional mezzanine levels or whatever that might be on top, and then one has to think about. So maybe the staff could just try and turn that into a number and then compare it to the Wanaka Town Centre's count.
Yeah, that doesn't include car parking, so that would be a major concern.
That's the question of whether the 5 hectares includes no build areas. Because whether the 5 hectare developable area has already discounted land for car parking and open space setbacks, and so if it's a net GFA representative at the ground level or not. Maybe you could just homework that out and give us some certainty.
All right, Jeremy Bell, residential rural lifestyle areas. Mr. Hudson?
No, sir. I think, again, Mel's up the evidence.
Mr. McLeod?
How did we arrive at the Waiuna Rural Lifestyle Zone in Glenorchy? Is that part of that?
It was compared to Mr. Vivian's evidence when he was sort of stating that the PDP, or there are rural lifestyle zones in relatively sensitive areas, and you can get around these.
That's one that's in Illinois now. I was just wondering how we ended up with that one.
Because it's sufficiently certain that the buildings will have a low impact. There's quite a thin ribbon of the building restriction area, essentially above and below it, and it's on a thin terrace edge. So it's the explanation that I gave in my rebuttal is that it's there's a lot more certainty around where the buildings will go, and there's height restrictions as well,
as opposed to 71.6 hectares with a bra.
Yeah, I mean, there's building restriction areas on the proposed as well.
All good. Right, any more for any more? I think me. Nelson? Sherwin and Ballantyne. Willow Ridge, Luggett. Speaking. What's the holdings? Question, Mr. Geddes, chips you, Mr. Barr, in relation to your 2016, saying, well, there's a smaller spot zone right alongside providing for the industry. Why is there such a problem providing for us, effectively? That's paraphrasing it. Do you think you're being inconsistent?
Those two activities are potentially incompatible.
Two spot zones that are incompatible.
Yes, yeah, right. And well, one got there first, and that's when you get reverse sensitivity. Is that the last person on is evicted? Then those activities have a long-standing use, and their identification as a spot zone, as that rural industrial subzone overlay, is new to the PDP. But having said that, I don't think it would assist that land use by allowing rural living development within close proximity to it. And having said that, there's some uncertainty with that site in terms of the submitter. I mean, the whole site includes the closed Luggett closed landfill, these parts of the site that are more sensitive than others from a landscape perspective. So is there the opportunity, or sorry, the potential for the building platforms to be squashed closer to the sawmill than what the sawmill would like? And the industrial zone itself with the
sheet coating, skin preserver.
That's right, the tannery, the alpine. Sorry.
The tannery still smells.
Badly.
So you've got noise from the sawmill, sawdust on one side, and the odour on the other side from the tannery.
Mm-hmm. That's right, the alpine group, that'll be their interest. They've got a fully established tannery.
Our alpine group, the tannery rather than the sawmill.
Yes. They might own the whole landholding, but I know for a fact that the alpine group have the tannery.
Right. Tim Burton and Lakes Landcare. This is about O&L locations. Any interest? Mm-hmm. Any queries? Lots of interest, but no questions. Taylor. That's another. That's an O&F matter.
Any questions?
Jeff Rogers, Cadrona. I see, Commissioner, it's at the northern end of Cadrona Village, not the southern end. I'm trying to figure out where this was while we're driving through.
Any questions?
Nothing from me. Solabio. Yes, we'll put you to the station.
Yes. Any questions?
Yep, that would seem to be that. Any final, lots of follow-up tasks for Mr. Barr? Any final questions?
I think Scott, I would take some comfort if you could also have a thought on the question I put to Mr. Barr regarding the extent to which we could use the uncertainty regarding infrastructure for the purposes of satisfying the NPS as a reason to reject submissions, especially for the larger rezonings.
I had jotted it down already. Certainly.
Well, Mr. Barr, I will remain to thank you for your diligence, for your patience, for going over time, and giving us all a day off tomorrow. We really appreciate the effort you put in and the patience and good humour responses even to some of the sillier questions that I might have put to you.
Of course, my
fellow commissioner never put silly questions.
I like the way when you got bored of our questions, you started asking yourself questions. That was a highlight.
I used to ask the panel questions when I got tired, but I got told off for that, so I just talked to myself.
So thank you. We will adjourn the proceedings until 10:45 a.m. on this coming Tuesday, the date of which is
23rd.
The 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.